Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 566 for comics originally released on June 13th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Hawkman number 1.
And I'm interested to read this because I like the writer Robert Venditti. I've always enjoyed his stuff.
He had a little bit of his work kind of cut out for him in this issue because Hawkman's got probably the most radioactive history in the DC universe.
Really? I didn't know that because this is my first time reading Hawkman. So,
okay,
frame of reference there. Never read the character.
That's good to know. A lot of it stemmed from there was the Earth 2 version that was Carter Hall, the archaeologist. There was the Earth 1 version who was Katar Hall from Thanagar. And then when Crisis on Infinite Earths happened and they say, well, we've got one Earth now. And they're like, well, which Hawkman do we have? Do we have both? Do we have neither? And different writers on different series over a few years had different takes.
Okay.
That there had been a Hawkman in the JSA because, well, you've got to have Hawkman there. And he had been a member of the JLA, but maybe it was his son, maybe it was a different person, maybe it wasn't, who knew? And they rebooted him essentially quietly a couple of times, not with like a major relaunch, but a new backstory, just to the point where it's like it got confusing.
Okay. Now, were there any iterations of a Kryptonian Hawkman?
That's new with this.
Okay, because I was reading this, I was like, wow, I didn't know there was a Kryptonian one. All right.
Well,
that makes sense now.
During... Let's see, there was Hawkworld, where he was, you know, again, a new, he was on Thanagar, but a new version of Thanagar.
Okay.
But then around Zero Hour, they decided, this is confusing, let's have our cake and eat it too. Let's have one Hawkman, but let's have all the Hawkmen. And he was the reincarnating version.
Okay.
So the twist Venditti does here, and it's a bit of a spoiler, but I think it's one worth talking about, is Hawkman discovers he is reincarnating not only in time, but in space. And what I loved about this is this issue has a solid respect for the past of the DC universe and Hawkman. And I liked how the legacy aspect of the character and how they tried to respect all the conflicting pasts of Hawkman without really making them seem that conflicting or that confusing. And, I mean, they did everything from bring in Gorilla Kingdom, which I'm assuming is connected somehow to Gorilla City.
And that's what I'm assuming, too.
And then when we get the various lives of Hawkman, and there's the Katar Ol or whatever of Krypton, and the Kartar Thul or whatever of Ran and whatnot, I'm like, okay, this is interesting, this is cool, this is a new twist, but it's in line with what we've seen before. You know, it's, again, the reincarnating in time we'd seen, the doing it in space, that was different.
Now, me coming in as a brand new reader, I was a Marvel zombie growing up. I read almost only Marvel and Image comics later on when Image came out, and some independent here and there. And I read The Death of Superman. That was a big one. And I read Death in a Family from the Batman. That's probably it. But I remember seeing Hawkman, and I thought he was the coolest looking character. And I wanted to read it, but you only have so much money when you're younger, and I wasn't reading DC, so I never read it, but I thought he was really cool. But me walking into this brand new, I didn't understand a lot of that stuff, but to me, him telling me those background things helped catch me up, and I felt like I understood a little bit of his background, and I wasn't as confused as I thought I would be.
Yeah, they did. They gave you enough to understand what's going on with this story and to have Easter eggs or reference points if you've read stuff in the past. But you certainly don't come out of this feeling like you've gotten your PhD in Hawkman history.
Definitely. And that's one thing I'm really starting to appreciate, because some writers can do that and some can't. Because I guess here he is and he's telling you all these things and you understand the character's history and it's intriguing and interesting to you and something that you can latch onto. And yet it's accessible for a new reader, which is hard to do, because when I read some readers, like not to pick on the guy, but Snyder, for example, he writes very deep riffs of like continuity and history,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it's so inaccessible. I read it and I'm like confused. I don't know what's going on.
Well, and it's funny because even some writers where I've been following the character literally for decades, I can find their stories a little off-putting and confusing because it's like, I've read it, but I don't have it all memorized.
Yeah. So I really appreciated that I could read this and it, I didn't feel like I was confused. I mean, there was, of course, some things I didn't understand. Like I was reading this and when the thing broke out, they start talking about a new time and space Hawkman or a dimension or whatever, where he existed as a Kryptonian, which was, I thought was kind of cool. And I went to the front of my book just to check. And I'm like, ah, the editor missed out. He didn't put the Superman created by. It's not on there.
That's so funny.
I was looking for it. They missed it.
I didn't even think to check. Well, Superman's not here, but Krypton is. So yeah, it begs the question where the line is drawn on that.
Exactly. So I don't know what the reference has to be, but I don't know if that was an editorial miss or maybe, but you just remind me of that. So now I'm always looking for it all the time.
Well, it's funny because I'm wondering if Hawkman's going to talk with Superman at some point and if this is going to come up.
Oh, yeah, that would be interesting. And I'm waiting to see how that plays out. Now, one thing I was going to ask you, you know, not knowing anything about Hawkman, when he first sprouts his wings when he's in Greece,
mm-hmm.
he has that little red jewel that you see on his chest and he kind of pulls it out and he next thing you know, he's sprouting wings. Is that something he can pull off? Are the wings attached to this thing?
That's something that with this incarnation, it looks like that is kind of how it activates. It's his emblem. And it looks like when he pushes a button on it or something, the harness goes around him and the wings come out the back.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know if the wings were stored in there. I was like, I don't know if it's like an Iron Man jewel, but I didn't know if that's normal or if this is new.
This, it's a riff on stuff that's happened before.
Okay.
There have been
some versions
where that's just he's got the wings. There are others, and that's rare, but there are others where he's got the wing harness to go put on.
Okay. And one thing I also liked about Venditti writing in here, he put some humor in here. It's not over the top humor, but there was a few funny parts in here, which I really appreciated.
He doesn't take it too seriously, but it takes it seriously enough.
Yes, because it didn't come off as something that you're going to laugh out loud funny, but it kind of made me chuckle a few times.
Yeah, it had some really good stuff. I enjoyed it. I thought the use of Madame Xanadu was nice.
Oh, yeah. And also, Madame Xanadu, that's the first time I've read that character. And so I know the other magical female character, Zatanna.
Mm-hmm.
I read something with her in it. Is this just another magic character, or is this like a voodoo type lady? What is this?
This is another one of the magical, mystical types. She's, I think she was a member of Demon Knights in the New 52, but her history goes a lot further back. Anytime they need, I don't say a Doctor Strange stand-in, but kinda.
She's there.
She's one of the options.
Okay, because they could go like a few routes. They have a few magical people.
You know, if you need just the mysterious guy coming in, dropping a plot point or something and sending people on their quest or whatever, that's more of a Phantom Stranger sort of a role.
Makes sense.
But if you need kind of the fortune teller or something like that, Madame Xanadu is one of the choices.
Okay. Well, not knowing the character, I liked her. She seemed interesting. I'd like to read more about her since this is my first read of her. And this got me interested in Hawkman. And I'd always, like I said, thought he was a cool character, but I thought this was good. It was a nice introduction. There's some action sequences in here, some history that's thrown in there, and enough to keep me wanting to come back to read another issue.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job setting the scene, reintroducing the character and his status quo, having a little fun of, hey, I thought you died a few times.
Exactly.
and making it intriguing to you know, a reader who's, I mean, I've been following Hawkman for literally decades.
Oh, wow.
They brought something new in. They brought something fun in. I'm curious if the series is going to involve a Hawk Girl or Hawk Woman of some sort, and or maybe Golden Eagle, who was kind of sort of the Hawk Lad, if you will, the Hawkman Jr. at one point, like ever so briefly. He was a character that showed up with the Teen Titans and a few others that inexplicably had Thanagarian tech.
Oh,
just
wow.
Some loser teenager who could do the Hawkman riff.
Nice.
You know, and it's not like he ever really, at least as far as I know, and I maybe just haven't read as far back as I could, never really seemed to like pal around with Hawkman much, if at all.
Okay.
But he'd be fun to bring in.
So he's added some new things in here with the Kryptonian version and basically all these Hawkmen, how they tie together. And I, how did you like the way this thing ended? You know, without going into spoilers and stuff. I mean, did you like that view of him laying there with the red background near the end? And then I don't know what you thought of that.
that's the, there's the great Armageddon coming, only I can stop it, but I must learn something first sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're either going to love or hate that.
I didn't feel it was mandatory to have in there. I get why they did it, but then when they get to the point where they've resolved that, then what?
Yeah, that's the one miss I saw in here, is that too many comics go to this, it's going to be the end of the world or the end of the galaxy, end of the universe, and I'm the only one, or our team's the only thing that can stop it. And that gets done a little bit too much. I wish they wouldn't have gone to that level on issue one.
Yeah, I think they had to do something to kind of set the trajectory of the series, so I get that.
Yeah.
For me, there were two thoughts that really occurred to me. One, when I was looking at that splash page and stuff of all the different versions, and it's like, oh, he's in different planets and stuff, yet everybody seems fairly humanoid.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
How familiar are you with the Green Lantern stuff?
I'm getting more familiar. So I'm seeing people with chicken heads and people that look
like... That was the one I was going to reference.
Oh, okay. They all have that weird name.
There's Tamar Ree and there's his Tamar son, II. Tamar II, yeah. The current one.
Yeah, that's the ones I know. And I was just like, what? Oh, there's chicken-headed people out there.
I think it would have been hilarious if one of these people had been, he was the Manhawk of whatever planet that was.
Exactly. With the chicken head, so he's not wearing a mask.
Exactly.
That would have been a nice one to put on the screen or on the page.
Yeah. But the other thing that really got me with this is... You know, Venditti is doing a great job in the writing. We've got Brian Hitch on the art.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, it was not his best work.
No, it's not his best work. I mean, it's good, but this is not his best stuff. And when I first saw Brian Hitch, the first thing that came to mind for me is, oh God, it's going to be late if he stays on it.
That was one of my thoughts too. And I'll admit it was one of the early thoughts.
Yeah, I read that. I was like, oh man, they're going to have somebody to back him up because... Oftentimes he can't keep up.
Well, and he's not only doing the penciling, he's doing some of the inks.
Yeah, which is, that's a lot of work for him. I mean, just at the pace he goes. But I'm with you as far as like, this is not his best work. I mean, it's still good art compared to what we see in the average book. It's above average, but it does seem a little off for him.
There was something about the eyes that didn't look good, and I couldn't tell. Maybe it was just the inking or something like that. It's not bad. It's better than a lot of artists, but it's not the pinnacle of his work.
I agree. And it could be chalked up to, I don't know if he always does his own inking, but maybe he's not as great of an inker as he is a penciler.
That could be. I don't know how much inking he's done, actually. I've never really paid attention to that.
Yeah, me neither. But, I mean, with his artwork in here, and not to be mean, but I expect by issue 3 or 4, maybe a fill-in here and there.
I'm not sure I'd think it'd take that long, but yeah.
Someone's coming along.
And if you need somebody to spell them out or whatever, that's fine. Just do it as a use that issue as a flashback to some other Hawkman incarnation or something like that, you know, to where it's not like part of an ongoing arc.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think this lends itself to having almost like how the Starman series had the flashback issues to other Starmen and stuff like that. This lends itself to that kind of an approach.
Yeah. So, I mean, I found this very interesting. It kind of hooked me. I mean, it wasn't the best comic I read, but it's a very solid comic. And I like the gorilla stuff in here. I like that. I thought it was a little cool.
I thought it was a good start to a Hawkman series. And I think that's tough to do.
Yeah, because I've heard he's had a checkered and off past and it's hard to write him. So for me to read this and be happy, I think he's starting off well.
This was more interesting than the last couple of Hawkman-related series we've gotten, I think. I was tempted to go with a B-plus on this, but honestly, the art was uneven enough that I pulled back to just a B rating. I think it's solid. I think if you like the character, it's worth checking out. If you want a superheroic version, essentially, of Indiana Jones, this is it.
Yeah. I'm very close to you, and actually, I did give it the B-plus. I thought it was... For them to draw in a new reader, it's a tough thing to do, especially when there's so much continuity and history there. So it's accessible along with, you know, paying tribute to people who have been reading for years and years. So B-plus for me.
That's fair, because this is one that could have very easily gotten mired in continuity hell.
Oh, yeah. It very easily could have.
With that, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Definitely.
This is Thor number 1, or Legacy, or LGY number 707.
Yes, so you know how to file your comics.
Thor number one of series 2018.
Exactly.
Ignore half the numbers they put up there.
Exactly.
I don't trust their numbers.
Back with Jason Aaron, but we do have a new artist.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, the art didn't really work for me.
I thought the same thing. I mean, because you look at Jason Aaron, the other, you know, Thors he's done, he had Assad Ribic on the first one, then he had Farmer on the second one, and now we have Mike Del Mundo, which there's nothing wrong with him, but it's just a big step down.
To me, it felt, the art felt murky.
Yeah, it's almost like the lines were just very distorted, and the coloring, he tried to make it look almost like watercolor, it seemed like, and it made all the art very murky in it.
It was really one of those things where the art wasn't bad, but there were aspects of it that kind of got between me and the story in places.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because that was really the downside to this. Like, I think Mike Del Mundo, the last thing he was doing, if I'm not mistaken, was Doctor Strange. And his art style went well with that. But here, it's just, it really wasn't working for me.
Yeah, I didn't like the art. Like I said, wasn't working for me either. The lead story I thought was okay. I'll be honest, I didn't like it as much as I've liked some of the other parts of Jason Aaron's Thor runs. But the whole War of the Realms and all that stuff doesn't really excite me that much.
And the war's been going on for a while. The one thing I did like the start to this. The start of it, you know, there is basically Thor or Odin's son. I guess he's Thor now again. Taking on what's his name, the Juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know why, but when the Juggernaut came out in Thor, I like to see the big guys clash. So that just tickled a fancy from back in my childhood. Peter David's Hulk, I used to love that stuff. So anytime there's the big guys on there duking it out, I loved it. So it was a nice little fight, and just seeing the Thor's hammer was destroyed in the previous series, or the previous rendition of Thor. So now he's trying to create a hammer again, or trying to create a weapon that will work again. So that's what a lot of this dealt with at the beginning.
Yeah, and I enjoyed seeing the Juggernaut and stuff. But the stories that are more kind of Asgardian-based than Earth-based often don't work for me as well.
Understand. So this is not the storyline that you like here.
It had a little bit of a strike against it going in, not an irrecoverable one, because they've done some really good Asgard stuff. But when you add to that the art style that's a little exaggerated in places and a little kind of murky in places, that didn't help either.
Understand.
And I think coming off of what I thought was a really terrific run with the previous Thor, this didn't get off to a great start.
I agree. Now, one thing I want to ask you, I'm trying not to get too spoiler, too much into spoilers and stuff, but previously, you know, we reviewed it. Jane Foster, she died, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What's going on here?
Well, yeah, because she seems a little less dead here.
Yeah, she's just there, and I was just like, it didn't say it was going back in time, because they're showing the refugees from Asgard. The world was, you know, as basically the Asgardians are refugees on Earth. They're trying to find housing for them. And she's alive and well. And I was like, what's going on? This makes no sense.
I'd have to reread that issue, because maybe I'm just misremembering. I honestly thought she was going to wind up having died, gone to Valhalla, and still being a character here.
Yeah, I don't remember her coming back. And that's, I don't know. I was going to ask you, because I read that stuff and I don't remember her coming back to life, or I thought she was just dead, and she's still fighting cancer in here. So I'm like, either there's a time jump that maybe an editor didn't put this in, that this took place previously, or what in the heck is she doing? And then that end story, how she played in that, was just a little frustrating for me.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with this.
I got, that's the one thing I really didn't like, Jane Foster, and how that played in this whole issue.
It does kind of cheapen the end of the last volume.
Exactly, because we are dealing with a very emotional, and we felt so good about how it ended, and then here she is, like, not even, you know, a breather, an issue later, she's back. I'm like, what happened? I missed something here. Maybe it'll be explained. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm far enough behind on my reading that I can't rule out that maybe I just missed something.
Yeah,
I don't think I did. but
I don't think you did either. And I, if you find something, please let me know, because I just read this and I was just like, I'm putting notes on here. I'm like, what's going on? I don't understand this. Now, one thing I did want to say about this book, it's a $5.99 book, and there's that little end story at the back where he goes into the future, where there's an all-father Thor, which Jason Aaron has done before. So you're getting two stories in here. They're very different stories. I actually liked the second one a little bit more, except for how it ended. I hated.
Yeah, I thought it was doing pretty good up until that reveal at the end. And the part that floored me the most was the final three words, which happened to be after the "to be continued." And those words are, "in Thor number 5."
Exactly. I was reading that too. I was like, what the heck is going on? I mean, I guess they're waiting for the release of something else that I'm not going to say. But when you guys, if you read this, you will know why they're waiting. But that's so frustrating. I was just like, why is this here? What's going on? It makes no sense.
I'm going to have forgotten much of this backup story by the time Thor 5 rolls around.
Oh, yeah. In 5 months, I might be like, oh, yeah, that's the thing I didn't like in there. That was the frustrating part. Now I remember.
There's also an aspect of that reveal that makes me feel they were a little almost opportunistic in terms of, we've got this other thing working elsewhere. Let's see if we can capture that lightning in a bottle a second time.
That's what happened here. And I wish I could ask Jason Aaron, was this like a mandate thing, or is this something you really wanted to do?
And if because so, why?
Yeah, why? Because it just seems so out of place. It just seemed, I was reading that second story and I was liking the way it was going. It seemed kind of cool. And then that just, it kind of ruined the comic for me. I was just like, I was on the path of almost an A for this book because I liked it. And then that just drug it down for me. I was like, now I'm frustrated. Why is Jane here? And why'd they end the book like this? Now I'm kind of frustrated with the whole thing.
Well, you were at least liking it a bit better than I was, because I felt the art was kind of getting between me and the story. The story just wasn't, you know, working for me overall. It wasn't like it was turning me off. It was just kind of there.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I mean, I really liked it. I think it's because of that may just be a me thing. I like that, the big fight and the mashup and the hammer thing at the beginning. And I really liked how that started.
I think if I'd been able to see it better.
Yeah, it's so muddled. I hate the art. Yeah.
And some of it is the choice of coloring. There's a choice of, okay, let's put the stuff in the background, a little out of focus. It was very cinematic in that sense, but in a very non-photorealistic kind of a way. There was just a lot of it on that level that wasn't working for me. And I think there's aspects of the story that, with a artist whose work was more in line with my sensibilities and taste, I might have liked the story better.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. So for me, I really came out of this, particularly on this backup feature getting followed up in, 4 months or something. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I came out of this with like a C+, and I'm like, you should have started off better.
I understand where you're coming from. This can be a frustrating comic. With me, I liked a lot of stuff in here, but some of it just came off really wrong. And I don't know why some of the stuff that was in here was in here. So whereas Jason Aaron would normally be an A writer, I went with a B on this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame, because I think he's been doing a lot of really good stuff on the various Thor titles.
It's been one of my favorite Thor runs ever that I've read. It's been great. And it's just, this one started off a little bit just weird and off. And a lot of it's the art.
Yeah. Hopefully it gets better. I'm sure it probably will. But
keeping my fingers crossed.
We don't have that stuff yet. We had to review the issue as it stood.
Exactly.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Definitely.
This is The Magic Order number 1. This is from Image. This is the first of Mark Millar's work under the Netflix studio deal. So what that means is this is not creator-owned work.
No, this is a work for hire. This is a licensed property, I guess, now.
It's a corporate book.
Corporate book. There you go. Corporate book.
Just like if he was working over on Superman or the Avengers or something like that. And there's nothing right or wrong about that.
Correct.
But it is a different mode for him to be in. And more power to him to sell his entire library and company and stuff to Netflix. And I appreciate them buying it, because I think that shows a certain investment in new properties and stuff like that. And he certainly created some fun stuff.
Oh, definitely. And one thing that was really interesting with that, you know, along that thread is in Mark's write-up at the end. He always has like a little editorial write-up, and he said that Netflix asked him who he wanted as the artist, and they basically, it sounds like they opened up their pocketbooks for Oliver Coipel, or what, Olivier Coipel.
Yeah, and we get some really good art in here, and Millar's been pretty good about teaming up with some really talented artists and getting some great work out of them.
Oh yeah, he gets the best of the best artists.
I will say, though, that the murder at the beginning got a little gross. I'm like, I really don't need to see that, but okay.
I was wondering what you would say about that.
But then when we started getting the scene-by-scene introduction of some of the other characters, when we got Cordelia, which was the first of them.
Yes.
And she's arrested in the back of a police car, and one of them's like, escapologist, is that even a thing? And her reply is, take a look at your rearview mirror. Flip the page, they're close up on the rearview mirror, she's like half a block back already.
Oh yeah, walking down the middle of the street or the side
running.
Of the street. Yeah.
Like, that was nicely done.
Exactly, and the cops are... They look back and there's just handcuffs in the car. They screech the car to a stop.
So, I mean, there's some really good moments on some of this stuff, which really I expect.
Cool. Yeah.
You know, Millar's good at that kind of stuff.
Millar is an expert at writing for a movie or TV show. It feels like you're reading a TV show or a movie.
Well, and that's why I think it was a smart move by Netflix to buy him out.
Yeah, because he's the best at doing that stuff.
I mean, he's got stuff that he could just be churning out, and it's like, okay, let's do this as a comic, or let's go straight to series on this one, or whatever. And we stand to get a lot of really good Netflix original stuff out of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of good new original series.
The basic concept here is this is a story about magicians going to war in a modern world.
Yeah. It's almost set up almost like a mafia family types in this magic world.
Could be. I really didn't feel like I got enough of an idea of the who or the why of the main threat or even the full status quo, other than we've got this one family that's being threatened.
Yes. The I can't remember the name of the family now. There's the Moonstones and the one person who died. I can't remember.
There was the Moonstones and I don't remember the other guy's name. There was one or two others that got killed. Well, one got killed at the beginning, and then what happened to the one at the end, I thought, well, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah, very. That was super cool because that is a thing that happens that is not that is better for the squeamish.
Well, and the bit at the end was something that, while it might be a little expensive to film, was very cinematic.
Oh, yeah, very.
So I thought there was a lot of fun stuff here. It was not a bad read. I don't think it was the best of Millar's work, but it may just be that the story needs a little time to get rolling.
Oh, yeah. Now, this one, when I was reading it, because I've been reading Millar's work that's been coming out now, and this is the best of the bunch, I think, right now. The art in this is amazing. It's very cinematic in the feel. There's a lot of threads and story points in here and plot, and there's a lot of intrigue, which I really liked. And I really like to see that these magic people are protecting humanity that we don't even know. You know, they're protecting us from the things in the dark, the things that go bump in the night. But at the same time, they're almost at war with each other, which is a cool take.
Yeah, I mean, their job is dangerous to begin with, and the infighting certainly doesn't help them.
Exactly. So you can see the drama that's built up in here, and you see some tug at your heartstrings family stuff with a young daughter in here and one of the family members. So that's really cool, too.
It was interesting stuff. The oversized pages and stuff seemed to help because it felt like there was more story than we normally would have gotten, yet it was still a $3.99 comic. The number of Netflix ad at the end were not lost on me, but didn't feel ill-placed either.
I was going to ask you about one of those ads.
Which one?
If you go near the back, okay, right after his little editorial write-up, this is something I never thought I'd see in an Image comic. There's a big splash page for Marvel's Luke Cage. But it's because it's a Netflix original.
Yeah.
So you have a Marvel ad in Image comic.
Well, it was a Netflix ad, but yeah, for a Marvel character. Given that it's starting up as we record this tomorrow, well, not starting up, it's dropping tomorrow, the whole season.
It's well placed.
Yeah, it's well timed as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, well placed. Yeah, well timed. That's what I meant to say, my bad. But yeah, it was really kind of cool because it's something that, you know, I'm so used to the Image House ads and whatever they're pushing. And so now it's interesting that you have a mega corporation that is going to, of course, advertise what they want to advertise on those pages.
Well, and if this kind of stuff works well for them, we may see Netflix comics down the line going direct, not through Image.
That's what I was going to ask you about after we, you know, we had rated this. If you saw that coming about, because that's something I really could see happening. It seems like they're very interested in doing that.
I think it's a possibility at this point. I don't see any reason to do it, but it comes down to if they get a threshold number of things going on at once, maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of like the we always talk about, you know, Marvel and Warner Brothers. They may see, or even though they want the comics to make profit, but they kind of see it as an IP farm for mm-hmm. the movies or for the toys and the, you know, whatever they're selling, lunchboxes. That with the same thing, you know, Netflix, they have to make this deal with Mark Millar. They have to make this deal with Rob Liefeld. It's a lot of work when they're all these different deals with all these different people. I think their ultimate thing that if I was them, but I think McFarlane would be a holdout, is I'd just like to go to the founders of Image and just be like, let me call it Netflix and publishing. And part of the stipulation is be like, hey, we'll, you know, roll it out to movies, we'll pay you. And it's just a loss leader and IP farm for them. For their Netflix TV's originals.
I can certainly see where it would be worth Netflix's time to go pick up a few other writers and creators. Whether I would go with the Image ones, Lock, Stock, and Barrel or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would be more likely to go after like a Brian K. Vaughan or a Greg Rucka before I went after like McFarlane or even Kirkman.
Oh, yeah, because there's so many. He would be like such a great thing. He writes so many things, or even a Brubaker. Brubaker has so many crime noir things that he could do. So I could see them picking up a few more people, just be like, hey, you want to make a few million on these comics you've been printing? And we'll actually put it on the big screen for you.
If they got to that point where they had four or five really solid star writers and such that were coming out with a couple of books or whatever on a regular basis, enough that they would have a book in the store a week kind of a thing. I could see them doing a Netflix comics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. Because I'm just very interested because I've seen Netflix say they want to get into publishing. So I'm fascinated by this and I want to see where it goes.
It was a good first step. I think it could have been a stronger first issue.
Yes.
Because I think we could have gotten a better sense of the world. I didn't come out of this as excited as I had from some of other Millar first issues.
Okay.
I liked it. I'm curious about more, but it's not, wow, this is amazing.
I understand.
So for me, I went with a B minus on this. I think it's worth checking out. I have heard, somebody posted it on the Slack channel from Bleeding Cool, that this sold like well over 100,000 units, but predominantly because I think it was ReadPop ordered like 100,000 units.
Hey, however you sell them, right?
I guess, sort of, maybe, but not quite. I mean, it makes a difference.
It really does. Well, for me, I really liked it. I think this is his strongest thing he has right now. But like you said, there's some other ones like Reborn that I like better than this for first issue. But I thought this was a solid title. Went with a solid B.
That works. I'm curious what else we get out of this this deal he's made with them. And if we see Magic Order as a movie of the week or series or whatever on Netflix before too long.
I think it's going to come sooner rather than later. I think what we'll see is we'll start seeing his stuff that hasn't been created for TV, like Reborn, maybe something happening with that. Because they do movies and they do television series, or something like this could be a television series, could be a movie, who knows? It could go either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, what was that thing with ReadPop? I don't even know what ReadPop is. I remember someone writing on the Slack channel, but what is that?
They are the company behind, I think it's New York Comic Con and maybe one or two others.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's right. Someone did write about that on the Slack channel that I guess is like a promo for going into the con. They were going to be handing them out.
Potentially. Yeah.
Ah, well, that's one way to get your sales up there.
It's not a bad way to promote a book, but if it shows up on the Diamond sales numbers because of that at an inflated rate, I'll be a little surprised and frankly a little annoyed.
Oh yeah, because that really skews things, and especially if they're buying it for 40 cents or 50 cents in bulk order.
Exactly, that kind of bulk purchase is fundamentally different than the types of purchases that are normally tracked through the Diamond stuff.
Exactly, someone walking in and pay $3.99 or paying $2 through Cowabunga.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm so fascinated to see how this Netflix thing plays out, though, because I just see all these media companies are starved for information. We just saw the AT&T and Time Warner merger happen. now you're seeing Netflix buying up all these people. DC just upped their stake to buy Warner Brothers, or not Warner Brothers, to buy Fox Studios. Disney for Fox. Yeah. So it's just interesting to see all this consolidation and people running to grab IP. So it is a good time for to be a creator.
It is. And hopefully, you know, the superhero bubble doesn't burst in terms of movies and such.
Yeah, do you get that feeling sometimes that it's ready to burst?
There's so much out there that, frankly, it would not surprise me if it does. Because, I mean, we've not only got all of the major characters getting movies and TV shows. I mean, Runaways, Cloak and Dagger, these are not what I would consider A-list characters. They're cool characters, and I love them, don't get me wrong. But that's what you go to once you've gone through Iron Man, Spider-Man, Deadpool, The Avengers, The Fantastic Four, The X-Men, and that's just Marvel over DC, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman. The Titans have a TV show. The Doom Patrol is getting a TV show. We've got Supergirl, Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, you know, and just Black Lightning. You keep turning around, there's yet another thing.
Walking Dead. You have a good memory. You just rattled those off like nothing.
Well, and there's also Gotham, Krypton. There's going to be a Metropolis show. I mean, there's much out there that I do think we're going to hit a point of saturation if we haven't already.
I noticed that you and I, everybody out there, we have so many hours in a day. And I'd like to read, and I read comics. I like to watch TV. But what I find out, I just run out of time. I would love to see every one of those shows. But like Cloak and Dagger's playing the other night. My wife and I are sitting out there watching TV. And my wife's like, hey, why aren't you watching this? I thought you liked it. It's comic book stuff. But I'm reading my comics so I don't get behind. So I'm sitting in the living room reading some comics while watching TV in the background and probably picking up half of each one because I'm trying to stay somewhat current.
I don't do that. When I watch TV, I watch TV.
Oh, I'm ADD and I try to spend time with my wife and we watch some TV shows, but half the time I'm reading. It's like, it's a mess because I just don't have enough time to do everything.
Well, yeah, and that's part of why I'm behind on my reading. And further behind than I had been. I mean, it's getting kind of staggering. I'm almost, let's see, I'm at, well, I was going to say I'm at 373 comics, but I just picked up my shipment from Cowabunga because we're recording this on a Thursday and the books already came. So thank you, Eric and James. But that's another 4 dozen books. So I'm back over 400 comics by a decent margin.
That's when you get that far behind, that's a lot of work you got to put in. And Comic-Con cometh. It's coming down the road.
It's just a couple of weeks away, yeah. So it's going to take me a while to catch up. And frankly, I'm not sure how that's going to happen at this point.
Well, I'm hoping you finish by year end so you can do the year end review and pick your favorite.
But it may be that I'm spending, you know, Thanksgiving week doing nothing but reading.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough. So, I mean, with me, I've been trying to multitask and it's not good because I'm not picking up anything on the TV shows. I'm picking up a lot in the comics, but some of it I'm not. It's kind of because like I tune out on the comic, I start watching the TV show, then I go back. It's not a good way to consume your media.
Well, and part of it for me is the competition between the TV shows and comics and such, because I've got, let's see, I don't know, 6 episodes that I've recorded to edit on TV shows.
Wow.
And 2 more pending, and we started another show actually last night that we'll record when it's done, which should be before Comic-Con. And I'm hoping to find time to catch up on some of the Marvel movies between now and then. But, you know, we'll see what happens. There's just so much coming out.
It's so much coming out, and it seems like they just keep coming out with more that it's almost like a cannibalization of their own material. You know, there's so many DC TV shows, and now Marvel's going to try and up the game. If they buy Fox, I'm sure we'll see even way more Marvel TV shows. It's going to be like, I don't know how I'm going to watch it all.
Well, yeah, because there's The Gifted and a few other things coming out. It's staggering. It's a good problem to have, but I need time to catch up.
Oh, yeah. I go back to when I think back to when I was a kid. I mean, there was stuff on TV like the Batman TV show. I'm sure that was reruns. And then I never watched a Spider-Man, but I remember I used to watch The Hulk back in the 70s. I used to love that. Lou Ferrigno and The Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like my favorite TV show.
Well, I think I've got that whole series on DVD. I'm not sure, actually. But I mean, the TV movies they did where they brought in Daredevil, Thor, and who else did they bring in? One or two other characters. It was some fun stuff.
Oh yeah, it was good. It was good. So I mean, it's just amazing. You know, if you think even 10 years ago, we didn't have this much choice. We didn't have hardly any choice.
10 years ago, there was pretty much Smallville.
Yep.
And I'd be hard pressed off the top of my head to name another superhero based comic kind of TV show.
Yeah, my wife and I used to watch Smallville. We watched every episode, and there was so little to watch back then. We could watch Smallville, and I could literally watch it.
Yeah.
Now I'm watching half of what I record because I'm reading during half of what I'm what we're playing back on the DVR.
If you had told me back then that there would be a Batman sort of TV show with Gotham and that I would be like three seasons behind on it, I don't know that I would have believed you.
Yeah, you would say, you guys are nuts. I love Batman.
So, yeah, it's just a lot competing for the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's amazing how that's all changed. So, but me, I'm only a little bit behind. I went on my trip to Vancouver, so I have the last two shipments I got in from Cowabunga that I have to read and about 20 from the shipment before I left, about 20 comics left in that stack.
That's so not too bad.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about, let's say if I average around 50, about 120 comics.
That's not too bad. For me, part of it is not only have they been coming, but I just haven't been getting the reading done. I've, again, been spending the time on some other stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but it's good stuff. It's like been spending it on the recordings, the year in numbers, the TV stuff. You have a lot on your plate.
That's part of the problem. I think I'm just trying to do too much. So I think if I can get that a little bit more under control or whatever, that would certainly help.
Exactly. You'll have to start recording what you think about the episodes as you're watching the episode. We'll hear the sound in the background, multitasking.
I've actually considered doing that, just a kind of a play-by-play of an episode or something. But
yeah, episode 7, really great. This happened. Just a little recording, then piece it all together.
I've actually considered doing that for a Super Sentai show.
Oh, so
watch
that would
the
work.
Episode and do just a few-minute thing of here's what's happening or here's what I thought or whatever.
There you go.
But haven't done that yet.
Hey, one other thing, mentioning the Super Sentai stuff, how did that series play out with Power Rangers?
The one I had been watching, Q Ranger, or which one?
Oh, no, you said in the comic series they had the...
They've still got a few episode issues left to do for the Shattered Grid stuff.
Shattered Grid, yeah. So I was wondering how it played out for you. Not done yet.
Not done yet, but I've been enjoying it. They're doing some good stuff. They've announced kind of what's going to be happening after it, which I've got some trepidation about. Partially because they're changing writers, but they've also got a couple of variant covers for some recent issues where they've got like all the Blue Rangers or all the Red Rangers or all the Yellow Rangers or something like that. And I've been very close to contacting Eric over at Cowabunga saying, you know, I think I may need those, but I've held off.
Even though I'm not much of a variant guy, you know, it just looked nice.
They do look nice.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Eric is the most accommodating retailer I've ever met because we just tell him, hey, do you have this? Or hey, can you get this for us? And he has a way of tracking things down. I was having problems with my pre-order bundle with Bloodshot.
Mm-hmm.
He's contacting the retailer, or not the retailer, the publisher, and getting stuff from the pre-order bundle for me, which is amazing. I can't believe it.
That honestly doesn't surprise me with them.
And he does it at cost. Just so you guys know out there who are listening, this guy didn't even want to make money on it. He went out of his way just because he likes helping people that are in a tough spot.
He's I've met Eric and James San Diego and at C2E2 and stuff. And it was clear to me these are the kinds of retailers we need out there. We need more people like them. They're passionate about what they do. They've got a genuine love of comics. And they want to do right by the customers and you know, they want to make some money, certainly, but it's not like they're trying to make it hand over fist any way possible, regardless of ethics or anything. They're trying to do it the right way.
I agree.
And I really respect that, and that's why I've switched my business over to them.
Super cool guys, which is a perfect segue into we have your question and answer thing coming up, which we need some more questions for that, and also the Cowabunga Shop Talk. Did you want to...
Yeah.
Mention that again.
So the Cowabunga Shop Talk is going to be Wednesday, August 22nd. It's going to be on Skype. And basically, Eric and James are going to talk about whatever questions we've got about how they run their business. How's the mail order stuff going? How do they price their variants? Or, you know, whatever we've got. I'm looking forward to it because they've got a lot of ideas on this. And I love hearing it. And I'm curious what questions get asked. Because, I mean, running a shop, on the one hand, doesn't seem that hard. On the other hand, it would scare the hell out of me.
Just oh, yeah.
Because the us as readers are fairly mercurial and flighty at times. in terms of what we'll read and then not read the next day. So getting their perspective on stuff, I think will be a lot of fun, and just kind of where they're planning on going with their business. I'd like to get some insight on that.
Yeah, and even for you guys who are using DCBS, I would check out that shop talk and join in, because you may have questions about how it works through DCBS that they'll be able to answer you on the Cowabunga side.
Yeah, yeah.
Which will be really cool.
If you've ever wondered how it looks from behind the register sort of perspective or whatnot, this is a great chance to get those questions answered.
Oh, for sure.
Now, the other thing we talked about was the deadline for the second question and answer episode. That's going to be a deadline of the crack of dawn, Sunday morning, September 2nd. I will record it probably that weekend, maybe weekend after, whatever. But I'm doing it early in September, even though the episode's not going to go up until October 12th, which happens to be episode 1500 of the Comic Book Page podcast.
Cool. Because
I figured it'd been a while since we'd done a Q&A, and it'd be fun to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So we've got a thread on the forum. We've already got a couple of really good questions on there. And I'm just going to let them kind of stockpile until it's time to record, and then I'll go through and do that. If you've got questions on what I read, what I watch, how I put the podcast together, just kind of whatever, this is a good chance to get those questions out there.
Cool.
And then we've got the preview spotlight deadline coming up. It's going to be July 7th. That's a Saturday. Although if you have the chance to get the stuff in before the 4th of July, definitely would be appreciated.
It would help.
Because that weekend, I'm not only going to be doing the preview spotlight deadline, and this last episode ran for like over 2 hours. We had great turnout. I loved that. But it takes a little while to listen through the clips, edit them, get all the volume leveled and all that kind of stuff. So having stuff in advance always helps. But it's also the weekend that the numbers are going to come out from Diamond. So I'll need to be crunching the numbers, writing the article and stuff like that. And, oh yeah, it's the weekend before I'm going to be leaving for Comic-Con. So whatever I need to do to get ready for Comic-Con, I'm going to be doing that weekend too.
That sounds like a very stressful weekend.
Well, and I might even want to read a few comics.
That's true. So you're not deeper in the hole.
I'm going to be deeper in the hole. I'm trying to keep it under 500, but I'm starting to question that.
I know. Pretty soon, basically, you're going to convert to Marvel Unlimited with your reading.
You know, as I was driving
home, months behind.
I was starting to think I may be able to do that.
I'm so far behind, I could read and be current Marvel Unlimited.
I hope not to have to go down that path, but it's an option.
Yeah.
More so if they had an offline option. Yeah. We're not going to do a teleconference in July because that would happen when I'm driving out to Comic-Con. And I have tried doing that before, and it works exceptionally poorly.
All right.
The hill country in Texas and the less populated regions of Texas, not so good cell phone coverage.
So it sounds like it'll be August, the next one.
It will be August. I believe it'll be the 11th, but we'll lock that down closer to the time. And if you're going to be in San Diego at Comic-Con, by all means, let me know. I'd love to meet listeners and stuff. That's always a lot of fun. They've already got the floor plan up as of today, July 21st, as we record this, along not just with where the booths are, but what booths are at which number and stuff. So you can already start planning your time and stuff there. It'll probably be another week or two before they start getting the panel listings up, but I'm looking forward to that too. That's actually I'm expecting to happen around the 4th of July, so that'd be the other thing I'm doing. Because they usually do it 2 weeks before, so the 4th would be the Wednesday night, maybe Thursday programming. And then, you know, that Saturday, they do the Saturday program, that Sunday, the Sunday program. So that's another thing I'll be doing the weekend of the 7th and 8th of July.
Busy weekend.
Busy weekend. Should be fun, though.
Yeah, for sure.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Justice League number 2 from DC, Tony Stark Iron Man number 1 from Marvel, and Lost City Explorers number 1 from Aftershock.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.